If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Sherman. I'm your host. I have with me a very, very special guest, Chad Osinga.
Thank you for having me.
Chad is a high school dropout turned college graduate, special operations sniper, combat applications instructor for the military. Chad grew up in a drug house with a mother addicted to crack cocaine who later died due to an overdose. Never knowing his father, he turned to the streets for the better portion of his early life. Chad joined the U.S. Army, becoming a sniper, and eventually teaching combat applications to every branch of the military and the FBI, U.S. Marshals, DEA, and SWAT teams. Don't get in front of this guy. While stationed in Germany, his five-year-old daughter had a massive stroke caused by a rare disease. German doctors misdiagnosed her before transporting her to Hamburg, where she would undergo surgery and initial testing. During this crazy time, Chad's pregnant wife would go into labor, complicating his family's situation. Chad and his wife would have a fourth child a year after his daughter's stroke, but life would again become harder as his two youngest sons were diagnosed with autism. After sustaining multiple injuries, Chad was medically retired in 2015. Once he exited the Army, post-traumatic stress disorder seemed to attack him as he had never experienced it. He turned to one of the drugs that destroyed his mother's life, alcohol. What started as a nighttime remedy soon became an addiction that would almost cost him his marriage and his relationship with his four kids. In 2015, Chad was taking a left turn on his motorcycle when a car ran a red light and plowed through him, placing his body into a guardrail. Most throughout, he would not make it through this incident, but God again had different plans. It took him almost a year to get back on a motorcycle, but he was determined not to allow fear or this wreck to control his future. Shy of 2 years later, in 2020, he was riding with a group of friends when a van came into his lane. He was propelled into a construction zone as his motorcycle was pinned into a Jersey barrier. Chad flatlined on the way to the hospital and again before his second surgery. Though Chad's last accident placed him in a position of hardship, it also spurred a change in him and an understanding that God had a purpose for his life that was bigger than him. He quit drinking cold turkey, quit smoking marijuana, and began unearthing the power within himself. Please help me welcome Chad Osinga. Chad, how are you, my friend?
I am excited to be here. I'm honored. Thank you so much.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. I got to tell you, reading that story sent chills down my spine. It's unbelievable. Now, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices telling us what the right thing to do is, right? They represent the good in life. And the bricks, well, they represent the bad things in life, you know, the stuff that we go through. And let's be real, everybody goes through something in life. You know, life's not a straight line. It's not, there are ups and downs, and we all go through stuff. Some people get hit with bigger bricks, some with smaller bricks, some with more, some with less. But we all know that everybody goes through something in life. Now, it looks like you've had a lot of bricks thrown at you, some of which you almost didn't make it through. It looks like they started coming at you when you were quite young. Why don't you start there? Tell us about that. You know, what was going on?
Yeah, for sure. So when I was born, I was actually born with Erb's palsy, and my mom, she's always struggled with, you know, drug addiction from her early ages in life. But for whatever reason, when the doctors told her, hey, your son has Erb's palsy, his left side isn't operating right, and you have this time frame to work on it, or he's not going to use it ever again. She took like a small hiatus from doing that. But once she got me to a place where I was functioning on, you know, on my left side, she went right back to those drugs. And, you know, it caused a ripple effect in my life. I wasn't going to school. I dropped out in the ninth grade. You know, I was involved with drugs and just a lot of violence and just not focused on anything positive, you know. It culminated at 14 when my house was raided by several different, you know, law enforcement agencies. She was sent to prison. I was sent to Oklahoma to live with family there. And it was just, you know, I was even anemic because I didn't have the right nourishment. You know, all of our money went to drugs, and a little bit I got from selling drugs, really most of it went to the older drug dealers. And I just had enough to maybe go to McDonald's and get a fish sandwich, you know? So it wasn't enough to sustain life. And so by the time I got to Oklahoma, I was just frail and skinny as a rail and anemic. And so life was definitely rough in the beginning. Definitely.
So I think then, you know, during our conversation, you mentioned that you ultimately looked at the Army as a some sort of a refuge, so to speak, a way out of, you know, the streets, so to speak. Tell us about that. What was going on? What was going on there?
Yeah. So I, you know, life turned for the positive for me when I met this girl in high school, and she was different. She gave me a glimmer of hope in my life. We ended up getting married. And after the birth of our second child, I was living in low income housing, and I looked around and I was like, man, I do not want my kids to grow up like I did. Like, you know, but I didn't have any skills. I had dropped out at ninth grade. I was from an early age, I was called dumb. I had a learning disability, and I was put into classes that, you know, basically perpetuated that disability, right? There wasn't a lot of encouragement in my life to be better than that. So I really assumed that's all I could be. So I didn't know what else to do. My grandfather was a Marine, and I tried to join the Marines, and they wouldn't allow me because I had dropped out of high school and I had tattoos all over my forearm. But the Army was like, hey, we'll take you. And at first, you know, it was definitely a very hard mix because I hadn't had structure or discipline in my life. I never even had a father figure. So, you know, another man yelling at me, we would normally try to fight, you know, but in this setting, that wasn't going to happen, right? They were going to win each time. But it ended up becoming just a perfect storm. You know, once I accepted that there was no way out, I burned that bridge to where I couldn't go back. I was stuck in this thing. And once I accepted that, I found that I was really good at it, right? And for the first time in my life, this dumb special education kid found something that he excelled at, you know, I fell in love with it. I really did. And that's what spurred me becoming a sniper and, you know, becoming an instructor. I just put all of my energy into that thing because I loved it so much.
Wow. That's great. So how long did that last?
So I was in the military for 10 years before I was medically retired, you know, and that definitely, the retirement part hurt me because I wasn't ready to get out. You know, I would have done 30 years happily. So
what happened? What was the medical issue that forced you out?
Well, it was several. I went off a roof in Iraq and I landed head first. And so my neck was really messed up, and then I had the jelly around my retina is dented in still to this day. It's like blotch. I just see blotches. But then I also had several other surgeries, you know, and they just, the injuries kept compounding, right? And the Army was just like, hey man, you're done, right? Like you've had multiple surgeries, you know. And I wasn't willing, the other piece of it is I wasn't willing to take a non-combat job. I think I might have been able to stay in if I would have taken a different job, but I didn't want to. I wanted to continue to do what I was doing. That's what I loved doing. Right. And they weren't having it. So retirement, here I came.
Uh-huh. But okay, so but before you retired, right, there were other things that were going on in your life, if memory serves me correct. I think you were having a lot of fun. You were having too much fun, and God decided to throw a brick at you in the sense that you had a five-year-old daughter who, out of the clear blue, had this massive stroke that it wouldn't have been as bad had they diagnosed it properly, but they misdiagnosed that while your family was in Germany and you were still in the military. Tell us what the heck was going on.
Man, so yeah, we were actually getting ready to deploy to Afghanistan. So we were doing like two-a-days to try to get in shape. And I'll never forget this. I was at the gym and we had a runner. And he was out of breath when he got to the gym. He's like, Sergeant, you got to come back. And he finally was like, it's something to do with your daughter. And so I was like, what in the world? So I get, and no one's really being clear. They're just like, hey, come to the school. So I come to the school and there's an ambulance. They're shoving my daughter in the back of it. My wife's already in the back of it and they take off. So I'm basically essentially following them. The ambulance had to stop because she was convulsing so heavily on the way to the first hospital, and they didn't know what was going on. When we get there, they assumed she was having seizures. No one gave her an MRI initially, just, hey, she's having seizures. And I'll never forget almost wanting to fight a male nurse in that first hospital because they were trying to give her an EKG or an EEG, one or the other, and you have to be still for them. And she was convulsing, right? And he was like, hold your daughter, keep her still. And I'm like, dude, this is not the time, because this is your job, first of all, right? Like, this I don't even know what's going on, man. You know, once a neurologist got there the next day, he did an MRI and noticed that her brain was completely swollen. She had had a stroke and that it was really severe. She only had a few hours to really live, so they had to do a craniotomy. We got sent to Hamburg, which is a specialty hospital for children, and they did the craniotomy to relieve the pressure on the brain. And I'll never forget the doctor just coming to me and my wife saying, hey, she's probably never going to walk, talk, or eat ever again. She'll be a vegetable for the rest of her life. At the same time this is happening, my wife is pregnant. And she pops, right? She gives birth. So at one instance, I had my oldest son and my daughter who's fighting for her life in the ICU room. And I had my wife giving birth to a newborn son in a completely different room. And I'm skating back. You would have thought I had skates on because I was just, you know, back and forth. It was an intense time. I remember being in the shower just screaming and yelling at God because I didn't know why he was doing this to me again. You know, what was going on? Why us? Why my baby? Why, you know, why give us a kid in the middle of it? Like, you know, you can't even enjoy a precious time because you have a life-threatening time with another kid at the same moment. So it was very confusing and hard.
Wow. Now, you mentioned to me that you basically stuck by her. You did whatever you could. You knew your daughter was a fighter, right? She took after her old man. That we know,
yeah.
Right? Because you were a fighter. And what is she like today?
Well, she's 17 years old. She can walk. She can talk. She can eat on her own. She actually has a job. She's about to graduate high school. And, you know, she still has her issues, right? But she doesn't let those things stop her, man. She has the mentality of a winner. And I love it, man. I'm so impressed with her. She's my hero, you know. You know, they told us, we stood her up. And in the hospital, because they separated me and my wife. My wife was stuck in Germany, and I was stuck in Walter Reed with my daughter once we got transferred, because the German hospital had only seen what had happened to my daughter maybe two or three times. So they were like, hey, she's got to go to America and go to a hospital there. But because of the paperwork issue with a newborn, they had to keep my wife and my newborn in Germany. So we're separated. And it was hard, man. I was living in a hospital room. My, you know, my oldest son had to go live with family. We were all spread apart. And but I'll never forget. I told my daughter, hey, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I know we're going to fight. Right. I know we're going to face this thing. And, you know, we're not going to be found guilty of not trying. So I would stand her up, and she had a plethora of like stuffed animals in the room that people gave her. And so she had the one arm that was working, and I would stand her. I would say, throw those stuffed animals against the wall. And she would just throw them against the wall. And then I would take her legs and I'd walk her back and forth in the room, up and down the hallways. Little did I know that I was giving her faith, right? Like in her mind, she began to believe, hey, I'm going to be able to do this one day. And I think at 3 months after, right when we were released from Walter Reed to go to an intensive rehabilitation center, she was able to take her first steps by herself. So power of the mind, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So going back to that, to those days, it was a year later, you had another child.
Yeah.
Right. You had another child. So, that makes four, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So you had another child. You had, at the same time, you had two boys diagnosed with autism. All right. Because of everything that's going on, you become an alcoholic. You freaking hit rock bottom, okay, because of a second automobile accident, which almost killed you, all right? You you coded twice, yeah. Right? And then it was after that that you started to listen to the whispers, okay? You realized that, you know, he was trying to kill you so many different times. And I think not that he was trying to kill you, he was trying to wake you up and tell you, hey, dummy, listen, you got to start listening to the whispers. You weren't listening. And he kept hitting you and hitting you and hitting you until finally one day you woke up and you were like, all right, I think I got it now. Yeah. All right. And you did the turnaround. Yeah. What do you think was the deciding moment, so to speak, that gave you that turnaround?
Sitting when I was in ICU, when I was in the ICU, because I was in ICU for 7 days, the hospital altogether 14 days, but ICU for seven, and I had no cell phone because it was destroyed on the motorcycle. My family couldn't come see me because of COVID, and I was by myself. I could only watch so many reruns, right? And I faced myself in that hospital room. Like I had no alcohol. I had nothing to, you know, numb my mind. I had to look at the man in the mirror. And when I did, I went on this journey, right? And I began to realize that not only did I have a lot of things I needed to fix about myself, right, that I didn't deal with along the way, but I also had a really great calling. And I think that I faced all of these things to pull some other people out the fire, right, to help, you know, those that are either going through or maybe hopefully help some people avoid going through at the same time.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this, and it might be a difficult question, but who's the one person that you could point to that you would say had the most influence in your life and why?
My wife. My wife is my best friend. She's the only person at a very young age that believed in me, right? And despite my mess ups, my struggles, I mean, she nursed me back to health on over three occasions, right? To the point where, I mean, she had to bathe me. She had to, I mean, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even walk, you know? And so she's always been in my corner. She has always loved me for me, but always saw something more in me. Right. And she was never that person that would say, oh, woe is you. She's more like, hey, this happened. It is what it is. Now, what are we going to do about it? Right. And that attitude in my corner always pushed me and motivated me to take that extra step forward, to find that one more reason to live and to be a little bit better for not just myself, but for my kids and her. And so if it wasn't for her, I don't know really where I would be.
Okay, so before we go, let me ask you this. Do you have any words of wisdom for my audience? Something you'd like to share, some, you know, words of hope?
Yes. The first thing I would like to tell everyone is that everything that you could ever need is already within you, right? A lot of times this world tries to teach us to look somewhere else rather than inside. But when I looked inside, I found all the answers I needed, right? The second thing is, man, your words matter. We have this conversation in our head. And a lot of times we're telling ourselves a lot of negative things, right? What we can't do, what we won't do. You know, a lot of it's perpetuated by other people in our lives or past experiences that we may have not knocked down as well as we wanted to. And I would just encourage you guys to, even if you have to write the things that reverse it, right? Make your weaknesses your strength. Say, I am this, I am that, and write it down, put it on a mirror while you're brushing your teeth and say it out loud until that conversation begins to change in your head and you begin to believe who you really are, because there's greatness on the inside of each and every person listening.
That is fantastic. It is actually, I feel like you've read my book. Because these are some of the things that I talk about all the time. Put it up on your mirror, you know, whatever your goals and dreams are in life, put it up in your mirror, look at it every single day. Likewise, it's brilliant. I'm happy that you brought that out. It's terrific. One of the things that I would tell the audience is don't be judgmental. Yes. Don't judge a book by its cover. The first time I saw you, and I've done this, you know, a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot. I said to myself, man, this guy must have been through something. All right. Because, you know, I see the earring and I see the beard and the backwards cap and the tattoos. And it's like, oh, my God, what has this guy been through? Whatever. But you know what? What I learned from you is, You're a freaking pussycat, okay? You are the most gentle, sweetest man I've ever met, okay? Regardless of what you look like on the outside, okay? You are an amazing individual on the inside, and you should never forget that. And don't let people forget that, okay? You're an unbelievable individual. I am honored and proud to call you my friend. Sir. Okay. And I'm happy that we met. One more thing before we go. If people want to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to do that? Do you have a website? Do you have a email? Yes.
So MrTenacity.com is my website. MrTenacity40@gmail.com is my email. And then if you look me up on Facebook, it's just Chad Osinga, my name. My Facebook page will pop up. You can send me a friend request and we'll go from there.
Great. Now, have you written a book, or are you writing a book, or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm in the process. I actually meet with someone this Friday about finalizing how that's going to work. And so, yeah, I'm in the works. Nothing completely all together, but it's definitely in the works.
Okay. I look forward to reading it when it comes out. That I will tell you.
Well, thank you.
All right. Okay, great. So, Chad, thanks again for being on the show. You've inspired me, I know that, and I'm sure you've inspired many people in my audience. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Schoenberg. Remember, if you feel like you're stuck in the mud, like you're spinning your wheels, wasting your time, your career, your business, your life, if you know you're not enjoying all the success, satisfaction, and significance that you desire, then it's time for you to book a call with me at www.callwithari.com and check out my Whispers and Bricks Coaching Academy. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.